The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Monday Happier Happy Hour. And Dom, A, welcome back, and B, I love the trickle out of the evidence. I want to bring you and the audience's attention to two specific pieces of evidence offered today in the Trump hush money trial. Let's call them Exhibit 35 and Exhibit 36. And the commenter here is Andrew Weissman. He was part of the special counselor's team, the Mueller team, during the, you know, let's call it the impeachment trial. But Exhibit 35 is a copy of an October 16th, 2016, wire transfer from Cohen's account to Keith Davidson. I think I misdescribed him before. Keith Davidson is Stormy Daniels' lawyer. He was also the lawyer of Karen McDougal, if I remember correctly.
Correct, yes.
And a handwritten note, along with Exhibit 35, which was a wire, Dom, a $50,000 payment for tech services. Exhibit 36 shows a handwritten note on Trump stationery with Cohen's name on the top and the math calculating payments and taxes, prosecutor said Monday. That might be the back of the envelope as I described it. But I didn't realize this was a new piece of evidence presented. Let's call it Exhibit 36, Dom. Here's the interesting part. Weissman, the legal analyst over on the MSNBC, called these two documents devastating. You have these two internal Trump Organization witnesses who have written these things. The reason it's so devastating with respect to the scheme is this is supposedly legal fees. But it doesn't make any sense because Exhibit 35 is the actual payment record that Michael Cohen brings to Ellen Weisselberg that shows that this is $130,000 that he wired to Stormy Daniels' lawyer. He called it the hush money record.
He literally called it that.
Weissman then urged those following the case not to dismiss what appeared to be a dry day in the Trump hush money trial as insignificant. It might be a boring day, but this is such hard evidence. It's the kind of thing that prosecutors in summation are going to latch onto and make sure the jurors understand how preposterous it is. According to Weissman, the two documents stand in direct contrast to the argument Trump's lawyer Todd Blanche made in his opening statement that Cohen was not reimbursed for the hush money. Look at the document, Weissman says. Look at Exhibit 35 and 36. Wallace then argued, Wallace, the host on the MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, then argued time spent impeaching Cohen as a character witness could only take the defense so far. New York University law professor Melissa Murray agreed. You can't impeach the documents.
Yep.
That's what makes the documents the star witness. Again, not the way Fox News will describe it, but the documents are damning. Here's the paper trail of the hush money and the wire transfer. Only I called it tech services, but when I took the Weisselman, the CFO of the Trump org, I called it the Stormy hush money. Ooh, that's going to sting a little.
That's got to hurt just a little bit. The hush money record, the $50,000 in quote unquote tech services. That seems problematic.
844-967-2789. I feel like we're ignoring our vibrant audience of court observers and Wisco Pauls. How you doing, Paul? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Paulie.
Hi, good afternoon, Devils. Great show today. Boy, that's a heck of a trial. I don't know how he gets out of this, but sometimes I wonder how anybody or certain people become senators, and I look no further than Wisconsin. I look at Rojo. So that kind of explains Tim Scott there. But look what Pence did. He sucked up to Trump for 4 years. Actually, it was longer than that, and did whatever he wanted to. Kissed his butt, if you will, okay? And, I mean, it had to be a hard thing to do. But at the end of the day, after Pence did all this for Trump, what'd they do? Because he wouldn't commit treason, they built a gallows to hang the man, G6. Why would anyone in his right mind sign up for that kind of job? I have to ask you. I mean, would you work for the – I wouldn't go to work for the Devils if I just kissed up to you and they go, hey, we don't like what you said.
Hang Wisco Paul!
Yeah, Jesus.
That'd be dissuading, anyway, I'd think. Hey, who wants this job next? Not me.
How bad do you need a job? I mean, for goodness sake. And that goes for most of his former cabinet. When you look at these guys, one of them called him a dumb SOB. The list goes on and on. So anyway, that's
But Wisco, you understand for me how close, how tantalizing for the very ambitious political sorts. I mean, this is one step away from the most powerful office in America. And when the boss is got 88 criminal felonious indictments out there around the nation, and the guy's like one Big Mac away from the big one, you know, I mean, it might be tempting to go along just for a bit and see how things worked out, Wisco. You know what I mean?
You know, Paulie, he's got a point, but, you know, who wants to be the next drummer in Spinal Tap? You know, it never ends well.
That's too funny. Hey, what do you want to sell yourself for? I have to ask. How bad do you really need a job?
It might be worth selling your soul for rock and roll, but not the vice presidency, Wisco.
All right.
Thanks for.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Appreciate it. 844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC, you're up. Welcome, sir. What do you got for us?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And a brief line of lullaby just occurred to me for just now for Donald Trump. Hush, little Trumpy. You don't need to say a word. Evidence is going to sing like a bird.
It is just
the documents are now singing loudly, 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 and Donald Trump will open his mouth again, and he cannot help himself, but he will be violating the gag order once again, and it is just shocking these people that are still going along with Donald Trump. I mean, that your duty, Tim Scott just violated his oath to the Constitution because his oath is to the Constitution, and he should have actually.
His oath is not to tell the truth on a Sunday show, though. I mean, plenty of politicians go on Meet the Press and lie. Look at Ron Johnson; he was on there frequently.
But I mean, if I was running against him, I'd say this man will not come out and actually say I uphold the rule of law. I uphold. He's upholding Donald Trump as some kind of.
Mark, no matter what happens, Rick Scott thinks that Donald Trump will be the 47th president of the United States, period.
Would you want to be that close to the man and be on his retribution list? If he wins the presidency, he might start building his own gallows with other people's money, of course.
Well, we're already on the retribution list, I'm afraid, that because we have people out there that are pretty willing to denounce us for criticizing Donald Trump for the past 6 years or 8 years, as long as he's been in office. So,
how dare we? How dare we hold somebody accountable for their behavior and their words? I can't imagine that would ever happen in any kitchen table or bar or ball game around the world ever. Give me a break. This is humanity. We should make exceptions for a guy who's barely human. Thanks for the call, Mark. We got one other one, the other vice president. You know, the Veep Stakes is going on, right, Mark? We got this one, Christy Noem. Now she apparently
she might have self-immolated. She might have burned down her candidacy and her chance at the VP.
Apparently, she's very popular among world leaders. If you have that one, Rich, just play the Christy Noem also on the Sunday shows.
Talk about meeting some world leaders and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I've been a children's pastor after all. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world.
She's the voice of her own audiobook.
To my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
No, I've met with many, many world leaders. Many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book.
I have many, many leather-bound books.
My time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book, and as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted.
Except she already did the audio on the audiobook, which includes her telling this story.
Who makes something like that up? And who can't just say, oh, no, man, that never should have got in there? You know, I mean, what? She can't even say. I mean, that her and Rick Scott, these are your vice presidential candidates. So here's
don't forget J.D. Vance. He's similarly detestable, but please continue.
Once Trump goes away, and eventually he will go away one way or the other, you know, the world turns. We got folks like Tim Scott and Christy Noem to pick up the mantle. Don't we have that to look forward to? That's great. Great. It'll all be fine. Don't worry about a thing.
They don't turn him out like Trump does. I am not, at this point, I am not worried about the next generation of Republicans. It's this generation I've got big issues with. We'll see what the future holds. I can't see past the next commercial break, Dom. I'm not even supposed to say that word. Look at, I'm under gag order and I broke it. I could go to jail.
No, 844. No, you can't.
967-2789. I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to talk on the radio anymore.
Malarkey. The devil's advocates invented malarkey.
And thank you for listening to the Devil Advocates Radio Show. No malarkey here. 844-967-2789.
Dominic, Fox News Digital, Foxy News, my source.
You keep going there, man.
Rolling. I am a mass consumer of media. I try to gobble it all up. I read everything. I'm like Sarah Palin. Dom, Rolling Stone's Mick Jagger, according to the Fox News Digital, claims Louisiana governor trying to take us back to the Stone Ages. Now, apparently the Stones had a concert and Rolling Stone's frontman, Mick Jagger, ignited a small feud between himself and the Louisiana governor last Thursday while performing in the state. The 80-year-old British singer. That guy is still rocking at 80.
Don't tell me Joe Biden can't do it.
And his band performed at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival to a sold-out show. After finishing the song, "You Can't Always Get What You Want," Jagger called out Governor Jeff Landry by name. And I would point out, Dom, and this will be pertinent to this article, Donald Trump is still using "You Can't Always Get What You Want" as of last week, Wednesday, in Waukesha.
He's been burning that record since he started running in 16.
I noted he played Michael Jackson, Little Michael Jackson, "I'll Be There." That seemed like a new one to the playlist. You know, it's hard to refuse when you're dead. Surprised I did hear some Elvis. That made sense. But he also played the Rolling Stones. And I don't know if you noticed, but Mick Jagger ain't dead yet. He's got the moves like Jagger. So Jagger says, "We're a welcoming crowd, aren't we? I hope Mr. Landry is enjoying the show. He's real inclusive, you know. He's trying to take us back to the Stone Age." That's what Mick Jagger said. Shortly after the comment, the Republican governor responded on the social media, the Twitterverse Dom, appearing to mock the singer as well. That's always a smart thing to do, mock Mick Jagger. "You can't always get what you want," he posted on Twitter. "The only person who might remember the Stone Age is Mick Jagger. Love you, buddy. You're always welcome in Louisiana. Hashtag love my country music." I don't know if you know this, Dom, but Jagger and the Stones have asked Trump not to use their music. But let me get back to the Fox News digital coverage. Though Jagger did not elaborate, Landry has supported several conservative policies since his inauguration in January, such as enacting more tough-on-crime legislation, as Fox News calls it, and enshrining constitutional carry into law. Landry also indicated that he would support bills that previously were vetoed by former Governor John Bel Edwards, a Democrat, such as the one that would prohibit gender identity discussion in the K-12 schools. Well, that might be what he's referencing. And oh yeah, to require teachers to inform parents about students changing their pronouns. You know, narc them out to their parents, Dom. And though Landry might get away with referencing the iconic "You can't always get what you want," not all politicians have escaped scrutiny. In 2016, Dom, 8 years ago, the Rolling Stones demanded then-candidate Donald Trump stop using the song during campaign rallies, as well as Start Me Up. And when he continued to use the song in 2020, the band finally demanded legal action in partnership with BMI, you know, the music licensing group, Dom, a performing arts rights organization. You know, they're the ones you mail your royalty checks to. The BMI have notified the Trump campaign on behalf of the Stones that the unauthorized use of their songs will constitute a breach of its licensing agreement. If Donald Trump disregards the exclusion and persists, then he would face a lawsuit for breaking the embargo and playing music that has not been licensed. Mick Jagger, I am your witness. I was at the Waukesha rally last Wednesday. They played it. I heard it. Sue his ass. This is 2024.
Maybe they're paying the BMI, man. I mean, you know how licensing, like BMI and ASCAP and
Rolling Stones don't need Donald Trump's money.
They're very, very specific if you put something, a licensed music up on a social media site. So I wonder if like the Trump campaign site is still, you know, playing that music.
Well, I don't know about the campaign site, but when he actually goes to the rallies where the people are in attendance.
Yeah, if you're presumably those are being streamed. They're being streamed somewhere as well, right? Yeah, of course they are. They're on YouTube. They're on whatever their streaming services are.
Yes.
You know, those things. And if you're playing that music there, well, we know from our own experience that those things can get locked up and shut down real quick by those licensing agencies.
844-967-2789. L.A. Tom from the Leftist Coast. What do you got for us, Tom?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and that means all of us, and we should never forget that. Second, why are these people such losers? They're just...
Are we talking about Dom now, Tom?
You're talking about the vice presidential candidates?
No, Dom's my hero. You are too, Crudy. But we're talking about Kristi Noem. She sounds like she must have fell down off her, you know, fell on her head as a baby, just like Scott Walker. Scott Walker saying, "Oh, I took over, or I stood up to all those teachers in Wisconsin," and she's saying, "Oh yeah, I've met many leaders, born leader." It's like these people need to get a different script. And I just want to say to all of the Republican people out there that vote, really and truly, look at yourself and know that you're not a loser, but the people that you are actually supporting are losers. Like, they couldn't even make it in they couldn't even make it in high school, for God's sakes. They're so such losers. And the thing is, remember, whatever the Republicans in power are saying, whenever they say anything, whenever you see a commercial, whatever they're spewing, they're doing it. And just remember, it's a mirror up to them. It's called projection. But for those that don't know projection, if they're spewing it, they're doing it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Be well, Tom.
Hey, Tom, appreciate you, brother.
They're spewing it. They're doing it. Here's the crazy thing.
She gets accepted of meeting Kim Jong-un. I mean, she literally wrote in her book, I stared the little tyrant down and I had all these little, you know, catechism classes or whatever she's talking about. Number one, terrible analogy. And number two, well, I mean, you don't make something like that up. It's not like you can stroll in and see the North Korean despot dictator on a whim.
Dominic, until last week, the worst I could say about Kristi Noem is that she apparently had an extramarital affair widely reported with Corey Lewandowski. Now that's the third worst thing on the list. Come back, more Devils.
Can't wait for next week.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Monday edition of Happier Happy Hour, rolling through a Dom. That was our first theme song. Yep. Buffalo Springfield, What It's Worth.
Oh, so good.
It is such a damn good song and very political in nature. And it does harken back, reminds you a little what they say. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does echo. You know, it's interesting. And I think because of the Rolling Stone shaking a fist at, the governor of Louisiana, perhaps it was that this article caught my attention. We're going to need audience participation here forward. What song or genre of music best reflects your politics? And I would say Buffalo Springfield, What It's Worth, is sort of one of those songs. But then we evolved them and Sympathy for the Devil.
It seemed more appropriate.
And it's exactly 6 minutes. Excellent length of time, non-traditional, doesn't play out as a single, if you know what I'm saying, Dom. But, you know, there's an interesting article. Again, our phone number, 844-967-2789. Here's the question I have. Music, what sort of music you like dictates probably what sort of political creature you are. You might not even know it.
Ah, oh, come on. I don't know if I believe that.
Dom, I'm going to give you a little of the data. You don't have to believe me. I believe in data. And the data is spoken. Americans really love classic rock.
Yeah, baby.
I often find myself listening to classic rock, but this might surprise you.
Let's go ahead. This for a moment now. I mean, classic rock, you know, to me is like Buffalo Springfield, the 60s, maybe some 70s. That's classic rock. You know, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses. When I listen to classic rock stations nowadays, they play Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses, a classic
those
rock.
Those songs now, are like 30 years old now, some of them.
I get it. I understand what you're saying, but that's not like, you know, that's not BTO, man. You know what I mean? That's like modern rock. Of course, that was modern rock in the 80s.
Unlike you and I, Rich has actually done some work in the industry. You were a rock jock, weren't you, Rich?
Long time.
Yeah, you got that
voice. What kind of music? And rock and roll?
No, well, it was rock. It was classic rock. And just I can appreciate your position, Dom. But the thing is that Guns N' Roses and all that stuff does qualify in the classic rock window because, what, Appetite for Destruction was, what, 1987? Eight?
Seven,
something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah.
Wow,
we were
man.
Young and
well,
now we ain't.
Okay, but there was already a classic rock genre in 1987. How do you throw the new 1987 classic rock in with the 67 now in 24? I'm just so confused.
You just need to expand your horizons. Nothing more. Very simple.
Okay.
You know, they actually do sort of define the classic rock genre here. Maybe in the data points now, maybe you'll understand where you fall on this chart. The guitar god genre. Weirdly, widespread appeal has, of course, been the point since its birth as a 1980s radio format. It's less a style of music than a loose confederation of hoary hits. Those of us in the less than hip middle-aged masses maybe wouldn't mind hearing on the radio for the 817th time. Yeah. And because radio stations relentlessly appropriated fresh waves of chart toppers as they aged, classic rock defies definition, Dom. One source says it began with Sgt. Pepper by the Beatles in 1967 and it ended with Fragile by Nine Inch Nails in 1999.
What, no head like a hole?
Once the mark of leather-jacketed renegade, it has become anodyne soundtrack of modern life. The Rolling Stones have evolved from infamy at Altamont to ubiquity at fast casual restaurants, from Gimme Shelter to Gimme Seltzer. It's not just polls. Maybe 15 of the 25 top-selling artists in the U.S. history would get substantial play on classic rock stations, by our count, the Washington Post, and only a handful of us are able to resist the call of the Eagles. I hate the Eagles, man. Lebowski said that. I didn't say that. Black Americans rated R&B tops. Hispanic Americans preferred Latin music. Millennials preferred pop. And Zoomers went with rap, Dom. You were big into the rap in college, I recall. Americans, well, just Dre and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, NWA, man, before Dre. And I heard Blondie today from like 1981. What was it, Rapture?
Rapper's Delight? No, Rapture.
Rapture from Blondie. And, of course, Aerosmith with Run DMC, Walk This Way, was a big crossover hit as well.
Dominic, Americans say classic rock best reflects their lives. But when YouGov, that polling outfit, asked what best represents the nation today, about 37% of those polled said rap and 36% said country. That's essentially a tie. The margin of error, 3.3 points. So, Tom, people perceive that rap and country are representative of America. And country drew its highest support from retirement age Americans. 50% of those over 65 said it was most representative, more than double the rating it got from Zoomers or Black Americans. Rap pulled its strongest support from Blacks, high earners, Millennials, and Democrats. And of course, like attachment parenting and dashboard infotainment systems, hip hop is a recent invention that suddenly became inescapable. If you asked instead what genre most represents classic Americana, almost every demographic agrees on country. The exception are Black Americans who stick with hip hop and young Americans who pick pop. Midwesterners, for some reason, lean towards classic rock.
Yeah, baby.
Now, Dom, rap and country also vie for the biggest cultural impact, with country eking out a 36-35 lead. The virtual tie causes an illuminating split nationwide with, wait for it, Dom, older, whiter, and more Republican folks leaning towards country. Ever since Beyonce made an album, that might change, though, Dom.
We'll see.
And younger, more left-leaning, and Black and Hispanic Americans picking hip-hop, so they say. And Indian alternative rockers will be crushed to hear that their chosen genres, which essentially are defined as music most people haven't heard of, wasn't the most obscure in the poll. And that sweepstakes, of which musical style inspired people to say they were not sure how they felt about it, Indy came in third. Most demographics rated world music as the most obscure. What is world music, Dom? Sounds like reggae, some stuff you'd listen. Is it? Is that world music?
As the Washington Post continues, they show the chart here. Classic rock way up there. According to the polling, 43% love classic rock. About 39% they like it. Well, let's see. Who hates it? Oh, like 1%. Come on. Who hates classic rock? A little bit more here. Classic rock easily wins the best approval rating. as in politics, we're looking for how many people like it or love it, and then subtracting how many people dislike it or hate it to get the net approval. Pop, R&B, blues, and country all do well by this metric. Many genres do. To be honest, Americans just plain like music.
And the devil's advocates.
Unless
our approval rating, 99.9%. We're like 99.4%. You got a few.
Americans just plain like music, Critty. Unless it's punk rock. Punk's the only musical style to pull a negative approval rating, which honestly probably sounds like a badge of honor to the folks who brought you such punk classics as Killing for Jesus, Armed and Stupid, and Stealing People's Mail. Come on, who doesn't love some classic punk? Come on, people. Punk's biggest fans are by far millennials. Interesting. They give it a double. They give it double the approval rating of the next highest group, the Zoomers. Beyond the top two, the Outsiders, who brought you Let's Lynch the Landlord, will be terrified to learn that they get their third highest rating from the highest earners, families who make what used to be called a six-figure income. But really, punk only comes out on top overall because anti-Mohawk sentiment crosses party lines. Republicans actually save their worst ratings for rap, while Democrats tend to more than dislike Christian music. That's some. I can understand that part of
Wasn't Striper like a Christian rock band once upon a time?
Metal band, yeah. To hell with the devil. Hip-hop, while polarizing, enjoys immense support among Zoomers and millennials, as well as their Black and Hispanic compatriots. In particular, more than half of Black Americans say they love the genre, one of the strongest love ratings in the entire country. Other top relationships include Black Americans and R&B and soul funk and Gen X and Midwesterners and classic rock. Punk's the worst rated genre in the South. In the Midwest, that honor goes to Latin music, presumably because the region has the nation's smallest Hispanic population by a wide margin. In the Northeast and the West, the two least rural regions by population, the worst rated genre is contemporary Christian. Contemporary Christian draws its strongest favorability from Black Americans, Republicans, and Southerners. The first group may not be surprising. Black Americans rank among the most likely to dish out positive ratings, no matter the genre. Republicans tend to be stingier. In fact, Christian music is one of the only genres that's more approved by Republicans than by Democrats. The others are country, classic rock, and gospel choir.
Yeah, I'm not buying a lot of gospel choir albums. I got to be honest. I did get my first exposure to The Clash, though, by my cousin Patrick down in North Carolina, Wilson, North Carolina. It was Christmas Day, 1982, or shortly thereafter. It was over the Christmas holiday, and Patrick took me to his bedroom, and he threw the album.
Oh, yeah.
He threw the album on the turntable and played Should I Stay or Should I Go Now? And I wore headphones, and it just filled my ears with with rage and outrage. And I got to admit, I like punk rock, Dom, much more so than the Christian contemporary. You know, I can like Jesus but hate his music, can I?
Why not? I'm going to die, my darling. We got to play some Misfits on the way out. Let's keep going on the lines. Music. What's the music? Does it dictate your politics? I don't think so, man. I mean, everyone loves classic rock. Dick from Madison, you're up. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dick.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Dick, you're on the radio.
Yeah, hey. Earlier you said something about you're not worried about this generation of Republicans, was it?
Yes, the next generation. They've all sold their souls to Trump. He's taken all their souls to hell with him when he goes.
Okay. Real quickly, I just read an article about all these kids that grew up, they were like middle school age, that are real into him now, that are turning 18, 19, 20, and their parents were Trumpies too, and they're down with this in a big way. Mm-hmm. Some of them are saying, we never knew any other politics but this guy. But
cult membership can be generational unless you drink the Jim Jones Kool-Aid, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. But where I was going to go actually was, where is the Republican Party? How do they do this? They keep finding these intellectual giants like Sarah Palin and this governor. I mean, it's amazing.
They got think tanks out recruiting them, Dick. Guys like Scott Walker.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Scott Walker. He's forming the minds of the next generation of young America's foundation.
Yeah, that's a scary thing, isn't it?
Well, presumably only 6 or 7 people show up to the ice cream party on campus.
Well, so that's true.
I'm not really worried about it.
Hey, Dick, before we let you go, musically, is there a music that sets the tone of your politics, or, you know, just give us an answer, Dick?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to stress you on this one.
First 3 albums of Chicago.
What happened after that? They put out like 27 albums, Dick. You stopped liking them?
I know, but I love them. Seen them 12 times.
Chicago. I never would have expected that. Not even the musical soundtrack, Dick. I haven't even heard that band's name, you know, outside of the city name, but I didn't make the association. Chicago. I remember like Chicago 17. That was like their 17th album, right? Perhaps they'll... Never mind. I was thinking a Green album, perhaps, for their tradition of dyeing the river green for St. Patty's Day.
Man, that's the one that sticks in my head. 1970?
Isn't it 5150?
Oh, you went too?
More Devils.
The Devil's Advocates. Radio for nasty women everywhere.
Radio show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now on the lines, 844-967-2789.
1989, that actually predates our friendship. Probably early 90s, like 91, 92, I think I met you.
Yeah.
In that time frame. What's the next concert you have tickets for?
I have something, but it's not coming to my head. I do have some tickets to see. I think
what's the last concert you saw? Can you remember that? That's also a difficult question, I realize.
It is.
Because you like to party at the concerts. I've known from personal experience.
I like all the concerts, Crudy. Who am I going to go see? The Struts. I'm going to go see The Struts at the Rave. I think in August is the next concert I have. But of course, Summerfest comes. There'll be, I think Greta Van Fleet comes in like May. Maybe I'll sneak some late tickets for that at the Forum. Summerfest, of course, in late June, early July, be a bunch of bands there. So, you know, whatever's around, man.
Live
music is the most entertaining thing ever. And short of, and I'm not a big country fan, but some of it's not too terrible. But anything live is better than the non-live.
So you're not a big fan of DJs? Because I used to be a DJ, and I think you're insulting me now.
I mean,
and Rich. Know, Rich was also a DJ.
You know, I mean, pitting in the record and hit and play is less than like...
What if I did some scratch?
That's what I'm saying, dude. You weren't scratched, and you didn't have a double...
You don't know that? Comment.
Yeah, I do. You weren't doing that. You weren't doing that. You were
down
playing
at Cheers,
like Guns N' Roses, and trying to clear the
floor. No. Au contraire, mon frère. Depends on which venue I was working. Cheers in La Crosse, down on 3rd Street, owned by Val Palin. And then also he owned the Silver Bullet, where I did play the Guns N' Roses at the teen dances, where they'd make the money on the door. And there'd be like 2,000 kids in this big warehouse-style dance place. The teen dances, I'd play the Guns N' Roses. I'd have to warn the bouncers. Paradise City was coming because fights would break out. It'd be a massive mosh pit of hundreds.
Pit is not a fight, just for the record.
No, but then fights would break out in the mosh pit.
If they can't handle the mosh pit, well, then stay out of the mosh pit.
But
no fighting in the mosh pit.
At Cheers Bar, which had a more diverse clientele, let's just say. I mean, a lot of black guys used to come in there. They had Funk Night. And a guy named Chris Black, I want to say, was, and I know another Chris Black who's not black, but this guy was. And he had this great album collection, and he did have the double turntables. But I'm pretty sure Val, and I don't mean to speak of the dead. I'm assuming Val's dead. It's been 30 years, and he was old then. But he's, like, old school racist. Like, he didn't want to hire a black DJ, I'm pretty sure, because there had been some trouble in that, and he was a little concerned about, his clientele in the bar, because I know I got dragged into court a couple times as a witness to violent acts that happened on Funk Night. So he doesn't hire the actual qualified DJ. He hires the white college kid to play Funk Night in his bars.
Wow.
And I think he thought if I made it less funky, like, you know, if I was less appealing to the audience, there'd be less people there. But Chris gave me his record collection, man. So there were times I'd be playing like Cool Moe. I'd be playing stuff that I couldn't say the lyrics to in that bar without getting my ass kicked. But, you know, there was a grudging respect that at least Chris gave me the playlist, and I'd go in there and play the good stuff, whether Val liked it or not.
Or not. That's right. You show him, Crudy.
Yeah, I didn't know most of the music. I mean, this was some hardcore stuff, some of the stuff Chris had in his collection. Good stuff. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it wasn't Madonna. And on other nights that weren't Funk Night, I'd be playing Madonna.
Gotcha. Not Madonna. Madonna just did like 1.6 million people in Rio, I thought.
Yeah, Copa Cabana Beach. Surprised you weren't there. First concert I've heard you missing in a while. 844-967-2789. Turning our attention to Appleton. Is it Mindy or Cindy calling?
It's Cindy.
And hey, Cindy. I saw Mindy on the screen. I said, yeah, but I just saw Cindy this weekend. I bet it's Cindy. How you doing, sister?
I'm doing good, brother. Anyway, I hope your last caller was only joking when he called Sarah Palin an intellectual dime, because that woman couldn't find her way out of a wet paper bag, for God's sakes.
Well,
I think so, he was being...
It's implied sarcasm, Cindy.
Yeah.
I hope so, because, oh my God. Anyway, my music genre is like something like Bridge Over Troubled Waters, Bye Bye Miss American Pie, and anything by Arlo Guthrie. So whatever kind of music that is, that's me.
Oh, all right. Some Simon and Garfunkel, a little folk kind of stack action there, Cindy. I like that.
Yep.
Cindy, are you a Bernie Sanders fan? Because I think you share musical genres. I mean, didn't he use America by Simon and Garfunkel as his launch music in 2020, I believe?
I think he did, but I still feel the burn.
I'm still feeling the burn. He's running for re-election. 6 more years.
Oh, my God. How old is Bernie Sanders?
82.
Right now? Oh, damn.
Nobody's worried about Bernie's health, are they? I'm not worried. He's taking care of the heart thing, Cindy, and I think he's in great health. Easily serve 6 more years. Joe Biden might serve 6
September.
More.
He'll be 83 in September, right? So he's up this year. So, you know, add 6 to that. 89, man.
89 and doing fine. If it's Bernie Sanders. He'll announce his re-election at 89, Dom. You watch. Mark my words. If we're still doing this show, and I hope we are, we'll be talking about Bernie's re-elective campaign. But he'll be 95. Yeah, but he's still more vibrant than any of those backbenchers on the right. Thank you all for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Hope you have a wonderful evening. Joe Biden coming to town on Wednesday. When we get details, we'll share them. But tomorrow, Trump's back in court. We'll be back doing what we do, laughing at his ass.